would like to acknowledge that the land which we are gathered on today is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe Nation, specifically the Chippewa Tri-Council, comprised of the Chippewas of Beausoleil, Rama, and Georgina Island First Nations, and more recently, the Mississaugas of the Credit River First Nation. Ontario is covered by 46 treaties and other agreements and is home to many Indigenous nations from across Turtle Island, including the Inuit and the Métis. These treaties and other agreements, including the One Dish with One Spoon Wampum Belt Covenant, are agreements to peaceably share and care for the land and its resources. Other Indigenous nations, Europeans, and newcomers were invited into this covenant in the spirit of respect, peace, and friendship. Most of us have come here as settlers, immigrants, or newcomers in this generation or generations past. We are all treaty people. Every day, we are mindful of broken covenants, and we strive to make this right. We commit to collaborating based on the foundational assumption that Indigenous peoples have their power, strength, and competency to develop culturally specific strategies for their communities. We are dedicated to honoring Indigenous self-determination, history, and culture, and are committed to moving forward in the spirit of reconciliation and respect with all First Nation, Métis, and Inuit people.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Beyond the Stethoscope, a podcast focused on hospice palliative care. My name is Laura Bates, and I am the education facilitator with the North Simcoe Muskoka Hospice Palliative Care Network. And today joining me is Louise Brazier, Bereavement Services Coordinator, and Trooper, the Hospice Aurelia Facility Dog. Welcome, Louise.
Thank you for having us.
Welcome, Trooper.
He's napping, but I'm sure he'll say hi when he wakes up.
Awesome. So why did you choose to speak about service dogs today?
Okay, so at Hospice Aurelia, back in 2020, during the pandemic, the early days of the pandemic, we were fortunate enough to be approached by COPE, where Trooper comes from, and COPE stands for Canine Opportunity People Empowerment. And they asked us if we would be interested in a facility dog. And we had previously explored this, and everybody on the team loves dogs, and the board had kind of given it a semi thumbs up, but it really wasn't the right time. I'm not saying COVID was the right time either, but we decided to explore it a bit further. And I approached RED Whitney, and I wasn't sure if she would go for it or not, but she did. And so here we are today. So almost 3 years in, we have Trooper, the facility dog, that mostly supports the bereavement program at this point in time. Of course, back in 2020, when we thought the pandemic may not last as long as it did, we had all these other plans for the other programs that he would support as well. But things were constantly changing and we were pivoting. So as of today's date, he supports primarily the bereavement program. So I just thought everybody is a fan of Trooper and everybody might like to know a bit more about how we acquired him and how he supports people and what he means to us all, really.
And I have to say, coming in after Trooper and watching how he functions in a group of people has been amazing, and he surprises me with his ability to read the room better than most people can, which is amazing. And as a fan of Labrador Retrievers also, he's just a good snuggle bug. If you need a snuggle, he's always up for a snuggle.
He is. And yeah, and he is this highly trained animal, which he can turn on sometimes more than others, right? But I have from day one been intrigued, because I have had an intuitive pet dog before. So I was intrigued to see how intuitive he would be and how he would read a room. And he does seem to know, especially during our trainings with our volunteers, where we're sharing a lot around bereavement. He seems to know who he needs to sit with. And he is generally sat with the person who might be struggling or is maybe openly crying, but he just seems to know who needs him. So that has been really refreshing to see that it isn't just training, like he does have those intuitive skills also.
Exactly. And, there's been lots of studies about pets and how they're able to understand the subtle body language changes in their own owners and be able to respond to that. So it's amazing to watch Trooper do his work and do that much stronger. How does Hospice Aurelia utilize Trooper in these programs?
So he, when we first brought him on, he was trained with two of us. He was trained with Stephanie, the community coordinator, client care coordinator, and myself. And the plan was for him to see bereaved people, do intakes, attend groups, things like that on the bereavement side. And then in the community side, he was potentially going to go into people's homes if they were open to it. He would see clients with life-threatening illness in our office or in their home, and he would see the caregivers also. So Stephanie is on her second maternity leave since we've had Trooper. So that did change things a little bit. And so Steph is trained. I trained with Trooper, and Steph trained with a loner dog while we were doing our training. And, eventually when she's back, I think there's one piece of her training that is outstanding. And if she does that, she will be able to utilize him in the program. So, like I say, primarily bereavement. So, lots of intakes, lots of volunteer trainings, lots of education. He's been to the odd conference. We just did a week at a kids' bereavement camp, which was his second time attending, which he absolutely loves. He's in his element there. So, yeah,
I can
that's how
just
he's currently
imagine.
utilized with us. Yeah.
That's awesome. And I do love that, facility or service or therapy dogs provide that support and help normalize the grief process and the bereavement process and not make it so clinical and stuffy. And people worrying about expressing their grief or their feelings during an interview or a session of any sort. So tell me a little bit about Trooper's background and his training.
Okay, so he actually came from the States. He was from a breeder in the States. And when he came to Barry when he was 7.5 weeks old, and he ended up with his foster Tanya, who we still keep in touch with and we walk at the trails with. So she had him for, it was supposed to be 2 years. It ended up being closer to 2.5 because of COVID and some other things that were out of all of our control. And in the first part of his life, he was part of a program really just for socialization at this point in North Carolina, a correctional institution. And it was called ABLE at both ends of the leash. So he lent his services to this correctional institution to start with. And they collaborate with another organization called Eyes, Ears, Nose, and Paws. So the inmates are responsible. They didn't have Trooper the whole time, but the other dogs, they would have, like Cope, have their dogs for a couple of years. So those inmates are responsible for training, and it's a full-time job, right? For 2 years, training those dogs before then they go on to help people, whether it be a facility dog, a service dog, slash full mobility dog. So life-changing for the people that receive these dogs, and life-changing for the inmates who are, nurturing these dogs and getting them ready to go into service. So that's where he came from originally. Then he ended up in Tanya's foster care. So Hope employs or sponsors, I guess, foster families for these dogs. It's a huge undertaking, and I think probably the biggest thing people need to be aware of is when you get these cute labs at 7.5 weeks old, one day you're going to have to part with them, which as I found out, as I witnessed when we were on the receiving end of that is really emotionally hard for the foster family. However, they realize the good that these dogs are going to go out and do in the world. So in those 2 years, that dog is trained in over 80 commands, and they are exposed to everything. So OPA, a local organization to Barry, like my hometown. And so everybody seems to know the Cope dogs here, and it's not unusual to see them training at Costco or PetSmart or just around town, right? And they are exposed to everything. So rock concerts, schoolyards, like the noisiest sort of environments you can think of, they take these dogs into. Hospitals, waiting rooms, all those things, so that they become, you know, acclimatized to all those different environments. So,
and those are types of things that these dogs are going to run into in their normal working life and day to day once they're paired with somebody. So I can understand how important it is to make sure that they're socialized and exposed to all the possibilities as early as possible.
Yeah, absolutely right. They want them, like they want kids, you know, mauling them to make sure that they're not going to react. I mean, you all know Trooper, he is the most docile, placid dog ever, right? We say he's bomb proof because fireworks could go off next to him and he wouldn't, you know, bat an eyelid. So he
exactly.
comes.
He's kind of the dog. He'd sleep through a tornado unless his person needed help during that. Like he's gonna just do his thing and the rest of the world passes by him and he only pays attention when it affects his person.
Yeah, for sure. And so you get this dog. So we got him in October and he's trained. The dog is trained. I am not trained, right? So I need to be trained. And Stephanie got trained at the same time. Wasn't ideal. Cope did a brilliant job of pivoting and changing it all to virtual. Very, very intense, like not to be sniffed at the undertaking of what the training like entails. And so we get trained. At that point in time, we don't know that we're getting Trooper. We know that we are getting a facility dog. And I'll explain the difference between them, like as we get further into the discussion. But we know that we're getting a facility dog. We know that it could be Trooper. We're not being trained with Trooper at this point in time. We're just being trained in general in all the commands and all the things that go along with it. And the whole time we are being assessed for our personality, for our size, like can we handle a dog as big as him? Because there were two dogs that we were potentially going to get. And I was actually surprised when they gave me the 80-pound lab because I was like, he's huge. But anyway, we've made it work. I'm really, really glad we got him. But yeah, so we get this trained animal and then we get trained. And then they make the decision as to which dog is coming to us. And then we do that, you know, gut-wrenching out of a movie transfer from the foster to the new handler. And I think Trooper was genuinely depressed for a day or two. I remember sending Tanya photos of him. They're not allowed any contact for 3 months once that transition has taken place. There's no contact allowed, right? Because then he's supposed to be bonding with the handler. So I sent her photos and he looked glum, right? So, and he's a low arousal dog anyway. So people will often say to me, is he sad? And I'm like, no, it's his face. Like he's not sad, but he did look sad. It took him a couple of days to adjust to his new living arrangements. And then he was tethered to me. I think it was supposed to be for 2 weeks and I think it ended up being maybe 10 days, but literally tethered to me for part of the bonding process. I'd shower with him just outside the shower. I could use the washroom with him in the same room as me, but any other time he was tethered to my waist. So, and he just came about with me in my day to day. And then they do a test to introduce them to their foster that they previously had. And it's remarkable. I think it's a little bit upsetting for the foster that they now have a new person. But yeah, so that was part of the training. And then after the tethering process and after he's moved in with your family and then he starts coming to work with you and everything, then that training is ongoing. And it's substantial. The check-ins, I can't remember how frequent they were now, but I feel like it was every few weeks and then it switched to once a month and specific, like going through quite a lot of commands. And then that sort of like culminates into this public access test, which we have to do annually. It's coming up in September for us. This will be our third one. But yeah, once you pass that public access test, then you have proven that you have him in your control at all times. So
Yeah, and I imagine, there's that liability of having an animal in a situation where there necessarily isn't normally an animal. Service dogs can go pretty much everywhere. And yeah, I can see that they need to know that your bond is unshakable and that he will always be looking to you for direction and to help assess the situation. So that's quite an intensive process. So you mentioned that he's a facility dog. What is the difference between a facility dog and a service dog, say for somebody who has a physical disability?
So great question. The main difference is, so Trooper and all his classmates, so there was this big graduation ceremony for him. It was delayed because of COVID, but there was a graduating ceremony. And when we were doing his training, there was himself, and then there was another facility dog, and then all the rest of the dogs were service dogs. So before we received him, it was deemed that Trooper wasn't quite going to make the grade as a service dog. And the reason he didn't is because he didn't like the heat. He shuts down in the heat. So that would be problematic if he was supposed to be a mobility dog and helping somebody across the road, for example. So that was his thing. It wasn't like he has like a prey instinct or a protective instinct or something that they couldn't quite train. It was just he's a big dog, he runs hot, he doesn't like the heat, he shuts down. And I've seen it happen. Like there are days when it's so hot here and he blows me off. He's like, no, I'm not doing that. So I'm like, okay, fair enough, you're hot. But they all
I think we
receive
all get that on a hot, humid day.
for sure. So they all receive the same amount of training, and then they get to that crucial point where they decide. So it costs quite tens of thousands to train these dogs, right, and get them to this point in time. And then they decide what they will be. And so Trooper and the other dog went the facility route, and the other dogs in his class went the full service dogs. So what that means is Trooper is allowed everywhere I go for work. When he was in training, he could come anywhere with me. Like if I needed to go to Costco or somewhere, like he could come. He can't do that now. He doesn't have full access rights to everywhere like a service dog would. And it's lovely that we have a facility dog, and he makes a huge difference to like our staff and the people in our building and obviously the clients. But it was a very humbling experience witnessing the full service dogs with when they were graduating, because they were with the people that they support in person. And some of these clients were on their second service animal, right? So maybe their family members had taken on the first service animal because it was nearing retirement, and then they were being trained with their new service animal. And so for people with like severe mobility issues, this is life changing, right? Trooper is great and we love having him, but the other animals are absolutely like life changing for people.
That's amazing. Now you've touched a little bit on his training and your training and how intensive it is. What are some of the commands that Trooper knows that aren't necessarily regular dog commands?
Okay,
What are
so
some of those things that he can do that we wouldn't think of him having to be trained to do?
well, it's interesting because he comes with over 80 commands. In a community hospice, we don't use all 80 commands, but he still has to know them. So, and some of the commands that, people who have dogs on our team, like myself included, some of the commands don't necessarily translate into the commands that he uses, right? So we might be saying like off, and that really does mean for Trooper to like jump down or leave it and things like that. So some of them are different. So for the public access test, first of all, the commands we use, the ones that I commonly use in the comfy room with clients, would be things like lap and visit. So if he's visiting somebody, he is laying his chin on their lap or on their feet, or if they were laying down, he could do that also. He does compression therapy, not so much in the comfy room, but if ever he visits the residential hospice, and the person's skin is okay and they want him to lay on him, he can do that. He doesn't do it regularly, but he can do that. He has that command. And then the lap command isn't actually on the lap. It's more up on their chest, and he has his like elbows kind of like resting on their lap. So those are the ones that we routinely use. He has some other tricks up his sleeve, like he can press all the buttons in the building to get in and out of the doors. He can tug. He really, really likes the tug command, and we have something hanging on the back of the door. I don't use it a lot because when we were doing our training, he's 80 pounds and we have glass in those doors. He really tugs and he really slams. So, but he really likes it. He's quite overzealous when he's doing that command. So that's what we commonly and routinely use in the comfy room. And then when he's doing his public access test, we go somewhere noisy. Sometimes it's PetSmart. I think this year it's going to be Cabela's, the outdoor store, right? So there's lots of noise. There's big stuffed
Lots of
animals
different
in
smells.
Cabela's, right? And Cope send their head trainer along, and they will ask random customers who are in the store to just help us out because it has to be people he doesn't know, right? So random people will come by with like a kid in a shopping trolley and try and distract him. He has to be able to get in and out of a vehicle in a controlled manner. So that's how the test starts. He has to approach the building like under control. We go through a doorway in a controlled manner. He has to heel the whole way through the building. So he has to be watching me. And there's so many bones and kibble and things like that in PetSmart, right? You cannot find a more distracting environment, I think, for a dog to do a test in. He has to do a recall, things like sit and things like that, he has to do. And I have to be able to leave him somewhere, walk away, and come back and him still be in the same spot. There's a noise distraction. Somebody might come up and drop something right behind us, and he has to not lose focus. He has to go under a table and stay there. I have to drop treats. He cannot pick the treats up. Things
Which
like
is a
that.
feat in itself for most dogs, let alone a lab or similar highly food-driven breed.
Yes. And thank you for touching on that because I'm not used to labs. Like, we've never had a lab before, so I wasn't quite prepared for how food driven they are. But there's a reason that Cope use Labrador retrievers and labs and poodles and things like that because they are so food driven and they're smart, right? If they're trained, they're really
They
smart.
are.
And then Trooper was having a bath at Pet Valu next to a policeman washing his German Shepherd. And the commands that the police officer were using were completely different from the commands that I like use for Trooper. But I think the reason they don't use German Shepherds, which are also really highly trainable animals, is they become very locked in on their focus for one person and they will only listen to that person. Whereas the lab, if you've got like a sausage in your hand, like he's going to do what you want him to do. So.
I've only ever owned labs, so I'm quite familiar with their lack of discernment when it comes to who's holding the food. Let's put it that way.
Pretty fickle, right?
If there's a treat involved, it doesn't matter who's holding it, they will do what you want. Now, what kind of commitment is there to Trooper once he became a facility dog? I know there's quite the commitment to get him to that point, but what kind of commitment did you and the organization have to put in order to have Trooper working with us for his working life?
Again, that was an intense process. Cope came and they interviewed all the staff like that are in the office generally. They interviewed all of us. They sat down and tried to get like a sense as to whether everyone was on the same page and would everybody be good with sort of not leaving garbage out and things like that. So they are trying to get a sense of, you know, you're staying in this job, right? And what would happen? They always have like a sort of legacy plan in place. Should, you know, someone win the lottery, I think is the example they use, and then you don't work there anymore. So it is a huge commitment, and it's a huge commitment on the handler's part and on the ED and the rest of the team, right? So everybody really does need to be on board. And The average working life for a service animal is 8 years. So
Wow.
is it or it around 8 to 10 years of age. So he's five now, Trooper, right? We've had him, I can't believe it, but we've had him for almost. And so it's interesting because at one of our vets' visits, and our vet is also really familiar with the organization, I think she is their vet as well, that he came from, and she asked how much he was working. And I said, well, initially he was supposed to be working like 5 days a week in the office, but as we know, that looks different at this point in time. It's more of a hybrid model. And she said, good. And she said, I really, really don't want to see him burn out. Like it will age him really rapidly. There's something we should all think about, but it will age him
Yeah.
really rapidly. And he has rules, like he has rules around how many clients he can see, how many hours he can work. Like he can't go back to back to back. And he does absorb, even though sometimes it might look like he's napping when we're in the comfy room, he's still absorbing and he's still taking on that energy. So, and it was interesting because I see him all the time. So sometimes I don't notice things as much because he's just with me constantly. But when we got back from that kids' grief camp, which was exhausting, our receptionist in the building said he looks really tired. And I said, you know what? He does. Thank you for pointing that out. Like he really is exhausted from everything he was involved with. So
Yeah, and it's funny, you wouldn't think of a dog getting tired by their work like a person would.
yeah, but they
But yeah.
absorb and they can't tell you. And there are some things they're so trained, like you know, my dog will let me know if he needs to go out. Trooper. No. I just have to be really in tune with his body language because he's not going to bark at the back door, right? He might look a bit more restless or something. So sometimes they're too trained.
Okay. That's interesting. It's making me think about, I'm viewing it in a different light, thinking about how, a service dog needs a vacation or some time off sometimes after an especially involved day or like something like going to a camp where the emotions are high for everybody all the time.
For sure. And even to the point of, you know, Cope, look at your routine. And they said, I think your morning walk is a bit too long. Like, you need to, he can't have a big walk and then go to work, right? Like, it has to, everything just has to be in moderation with him so that he has longevity in his career. So,
Yeah. Meanwhile, most of us are going for a longer walk because we want our dog to be tired out by the walk so that they can rest while we go to work.
yes.
Interesting. Now you've touched a little bit on service and facility dogs, but there's also therapy dogs out there. And what is the difference between a service or facility dog and a therapy dog? Because I think people can get confused by that sometimes.
Yes, they can. So therapy dogs can sometimes start out as pets. Like lots of people will say, I have a dog. It's so intuitive. It's so friendly. I would love to take it into a senior's home, for example. And they make that happen. So generally, that's how they start out. And there are different organizations, St. John's, I think, is one of them, that you can take your dog to and do some training. And then when it is visiting, like a senior's home, for example, it would wear its vest and it would be working as a therapy dog. There's no formal training required, and I think they have to do extra sort of accreditations and certificates if they want to be able to work with children. But yeah, but it's something that if you have a friendly, lovely dog, you can approach some of these other agencies and see if your dog can share its gifts like with other people.
Interesting. So tell me about the benefits of having a facility dog. What can Trooper do that maybe somebody like yourself who's trained and experienced in bereavement work might not be able to do or do as well?
So it's interesting because he has all these commands and he has this training, this extensive training. And when we're in the comfy room, as an example, when we are in, you know, maybe a heavy intake with somebody, we're only using a handful of those commands, but it is his sort of presence that he's lending to the person and his support, and they're leaning on him, whether it's like they're sat with him or he sat on them, or they're just playing with his ears, or they are receiving like some comfort from that. Long before we had a facility dog, we had it built into our assessment questions. We always ask about pets. So, because I've always had this theory, like people do better with pets, right? It gives you a sense of purpose. You have to get up, you have to feed them, you have to walk them, you have no choice, right? So I think it's really, really good for people, especially people who find themselves by themselves. So we always had that worked into the questions anyway. And there's so much research that backs up having a facility animal. And the research is great, right? But I get to witness it every day. We also offer another program called equine therapy. And again, the horses, we don't know because they've never told us, but we don't know how they do what they do. But we've witnessed it. Like we've gone to groups where people are sharing their grief and they are grooming the horses and walking the horses, and sometimes they're even like sort of leading up to riding the horses. But I've witnessed people stood around in a circle sharing, and one of the clients had had another loss while they were in group, and so they were sharing this other loss that had occurred, and the horse out of nowhere just sauntered over, came, put its like face on the person's shoulder from behind and just nuzzled in. And I was like, how does the horse know? They just know.
They just know.
It was beautiful to witness. It was such a magical moment that made me think, yes, we have to keep this program going. So
yeah.
And I
feel the same as you. Animals have always been, you know, helpful in terms of their presence, even if they're not trained to do any specific assistance jobs. You know, you hear of people who have pets who are healthier overall. They've got lower blood pressure, better emotional and psychological health, less pain, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, you even hear of people with advanced dementia or Alzheimer's who still have that ability to connect with an animal, even if they can't make a meaningful connection with people anymore.
Yes, animals, like all the studies show, and I think we can list all the references at the in the link at the end of this podcast, right? But they can read body language, like we can't read body language. So there are so many studies that support this. I mean, Trooper doesn't do this because it's not his job, but lots of those dogs that were in his graduating class can sense maybe like a seizure coming on in somebody and can know when somebody is going to have an episode and it's time to grab medication or alert for help and things like that. So, and absolutely, the studies show that they lower blood pressure. I mean, cats are supposed to lower blood pressure. I don't think my cat does that for me. I think it does the opposite, but animals in general are supposed to lower blood pressure.
Yeah, and just I think like you touched on before with the socialization and the having a reason to get up and get moving in the morning to take care of another being in and itself is a huge help for people's emotional and physical well-being.
Absolutely. Like especially during COVID, right? When sometimes it was just somebody and their pet at home. And what's more loyal than a dog? Like absolutely nothing, right? So
exactly.
Yeah, it's every workplace should have an animal, in my opinion. Everybody should have an animal if they have the means and the space to have one.
Have you encountered any barriers, or do you know of any barriers that have been misproven as they've studied the use of these facility dogs or therapy or service dogs? I know they're not back in the day, but previously there was concerns about animals transmitting disease to people or carrying disease around facilities. Is that still an issue, or have they disproven that?
Well, that definitely is one of the biggest obstacles, is like there is a concern about infection spread. And I mean, of all the times to get a dog during COVID. So basically, what we were told was the fur is not a transmission area. The vest, however, that he wears is. So
Okay.
that needed to be kept clean. And then, funnily enough, we were just at that camp and they had an outbreak. And again, we got into this whole discussion about whether dog's fur can like transmit things. And we don't really think it can. However, like, you know, just to be safe, we didn't have 70 kids like touching him that week. But yeah, that definitely is some of the barriers. And then obviously, labs, especially, they shed a lot, right? So that is something to consider. You want this docile, like food-driven creature. But the flip side of it is they are going to shed, they are going to drool, they're going to leave mess. So you have to embrace all of that. But yeah, no, I think the infection, like the fur being a transmission thing, that has been disproven. And I mean, he has to have all his vaccinations too, right? So he's not something as, you know, extreme as rabies, and all of that stuff is taken care of. So but some people, especially I have some clients who, most people want to see the dog, they're very open to it. If they're allergic or they're fearful, then maybe not so much, and I respect that. But some people are just like, well, you know, dogs are outdoor creatures, so no, I'm not really fussed if we see the dog. And they're missing out.
I agree, but I do understand that not everybody is an animal person or a dog person. So it's good that, and I'm sure Trooper can also sense the people who maybe aren't so sure about having him too close.
He
And
can.
I'm sure he respects that space too.
Yeah, he absolutely can.
Yeah. So you touched on Trooper's early life and that he was helping out in a prison program. And then in a foster home, is we haven't touched on this, but what kind of financial responsibilities is there to get Trooper to the point where he is a working dog? Normally when you buy or adopt a pet, you have that initial upfront cost and some ongoing yearly financial needs. And but that training, who provides that training and who absorbs that cost? Is it the organization that's raising him?
Originally it was COPE, so the organization he came from, and I believe the reason he's called Trooper is because whoever sponsored him in the very beginning got to name him, right? So the sponsor gets to name the dog. So some of them have got some really wacky names out there, but hey, if you're spending that much money, you get to name the dog. And then the organization that is purchasing the animal has to make a fee up front as well. So because he was going to be supporting clients and programs and things, I think we could use like an aspect of fundraised money that to go towards that. And then Trooper has a very generous benefactor in our community who put forward like a sum of money to go towards sort of vets' bills and food and things like that. So but you
That's
definitely
amazing.
need the buy-in of some people who are gonna, because it's not just a one-time payment, right? It's an ongoing expense.
Now, you touched on before that there's that 3 month bonding period where Trooper's not allowed to see his previous foster parent and foster family. Is he allowed contact afterwards, once he's proven to be bonded to his new handler? Is he allowed, the occasional visit?
Yes, he is. And it hasn't happened yet, but if I was to go on a vacation because of COVID and everything else, that would probably be where he would stay, because they were together for a couple of years. And then Tanya, his foster, she did take on another COPE puppy that was then being trained also. So yes, they've seen each other plenty of times. He goes to the trails, and some of the other COPE puppies also run at the trails with him. So yeah, they're allowed to see each other after that. So
That's awesome. So, if somebody was thinking about embarking on this journey to get a facility dog or a service dog, what's sort of the good, the bad, and the ugly that they need to consider before they start this process? Any words of wisdom or advice that you could offer?
Well, it definitely was a different experience. I would not change a thing. I love Trooper, the staff loves Trooper. All of that is great, right? But it wasn't ideal during COVID to have that extra stress. Now, some parts of it were actually great because we were in lockdown. It was a bit quieter, so we could give time to the training. The training, and it was virtual, and it was kind of like half a day, I want to say for about a month. But I think if it wasn't COVID and it was in-person training, I think you were expected to step away from your working life for at least 2 weeks. And it's very, very intensive training. So to be able to
Quite a
find that,
commitment.
it is a huge commitment. And so, and we are just one recipient, maybe out of a class of eight dogs. And so you know what your calendar's like, it fills up really quickly. Well, it's not always flexible on their end. You have to really try and accommodate their needs because they are trying to fit you in for training along with all these other dogs as well. So that was definitely challenging, and it is a huge undertaking to take that training in the first place. And I think in this field, we never truly turn off from what we're doing, right? So we try
Yep.
to, but not really. You don't really ever, when you have an animal with you that belongs to your work, there's that extra sense of responsibility. There's a whole bunch of rules around him that my other dog just seems like a delinquent compared to him, right? He can just do what he likes, and Trooper's got all these rules. For example, like Trooper's sort of maintenance needs and grooming needs. Like Trooper needs his teeth brushed every night, and he needs to be brushed every day, and his nails done once a week, and have a bath once a month. And we joke, I'm like, I don't think I have that much grooming, but those things have to happen because he's in service. So when you're tired at the end of the day and you just want to go to bed, and then you have to chase the dog around the house to brush his teeth. Those are things to know. The wear and tear on your house and your heart
Oh, yeah.
and your vehicle. You should think about those things. And when I'm out in the community, I feel like I have a child with me. I always have to have an eye and an ear open. And it's I have to carry that diaper bag around with me, right? Like I have to make sure I have his water, I have his treats, I have his poo bags. So I'm used to it now, and I'm used to having a dog. And then the other piece is, one day when Trooper isn't working in our program, which no one likes to think about at this point in time, but there's been a couple of days, one due to the wildfire smoke that I didn't bring him in a couple of months back. And then yesterday I didn't bring him in for the staff event. And it's weird. Like I feel like I'm missing like a piece of me. My partner's not there. Like he's so in sync with me, the way we walk around together. So that was really weird. And what really stood out to me yesterday was I didn't realize how much I rely on him in an intake, right? He's not just supporting the people, like he's there, and I didn't realize that. So
And you two are tag teaming more than you realized.
yeah, for sure. So like would I do it again? Absolutely, but like it's just good to have your eyes wide open for some of these things.
You touched on this a little bit, but what does happen when Trooper or any service or facility dog retires? What does retirement look like for a highly trained dog?
I'm hoping he just gets to be a regular dog and the rules kind of like go out the window a little bit for him, and he just gets to live his best life because we get to witness, we have the privilege because he lives with us, right? So we get to witness him being on vacation with us and things like that. So he loves being a regular dog as well. Like, I think he would probably like to be a professional frisbee player. If there's a dog league out there, he would like to do something like
Nice.
that. It was discussed like when we first took him on that because everybody wants what's best for the dog, right? So he becomes attached to his people, we become attached to him, that we would have first right of refusal for when his working days are done. So,
Okay.
yeah.
So it would, he would, I do like that idea that he would get to stay with you and your family and just enjoy life as a regular dog again.
Yeah, and I think that's happened with some of the other hospices in our region that have dogs as well. I think those people, and some of them have gone on to retire themselves, right? So they are retired together now happily, some of these service dogs. So that's the ideal scenario, right? Is they retire, and he's going to retire before I do, but they retire and then I retire, and we live out our days together.
Before we end our conversation, I would love to hear some of your most memorable or meaningful experiences that you've seen and had with Trooper in your work. Is there anything that stands out where you really were like, that was Trooper and he was giving it 150% today?
There's a really recent one. Well, first of all, I think I said everybody in the building likes him, right? And knows him now. And he's got the ladies on reception, they call themselves his aunties, and he knows where the treats are. And so there's those people. So I think on the daily he just makes people smile, which is lovely. And he makes the staff smile. Like when Daniela, the social worker, was with us, I came back in from the bathroom one day, and Daniela was spooning with Trooper on the rug just
Aww.
because she wanted a hug and he was so into it. So those small daily encounters where he just makes people smile, I think that makes a difference and puts a smile on people's faces. But more recently, we were at this children's grief camp, and there was a young lady who had mobility issues and really wasn't interested in engaging in any of the grief activities, was not ready to share, I don't think, and but loved animals. We knew she loved animals. So we organized some time away from the crowd with just her and Trooper and I and her camp counselor. And she went from, she still didn't want to work on her grief, which was fine, but she went from not joining in to a single activity to just opening up. And it took like
Wow.
an hour of hanging out with Trooper and petting him. And it was great for him because he got to do some of those commands, which we know he has for people in wheelchairs. So she really, really opened up. And then after we'd left the camp, somebody sent me some pics, but she was involved in everything after that. So that wasn't anything that I did. That was something that Trooper did. We weren't using like any grief techniques, or that was just his own magic. So yeah, so that was beautiful. And then Enger and I got to take him into the prison
Wow.
back in the fall, and he was a big hit there. And again, people just seem to open up. They just let their guard down a little bit, I think, when there's an animal, right? So
There's no judgment from an animal. There's no condemnation. There's no preconceived notions about how somebody should be or shouldn't be. They love unconditionally and they accept us how we are. No matter what.
they really do. Yeah, they really do. It really is like a privilege to have him as a team member, right? And I think everybody feels the same way. Like I know he lives with us, but I don't call him my dog. I'm like, no, he belongs to the hospice. Like he supports everybody there. So yeah, I love having him
Yeah.
though. Were there any questions that we
I was just wondering, you were talking about the fact that Trooper has many rules and, all his grooming rules, needing to brush his teeth, and how your dog looks like a delinquent next door to him. How does that work in your house? Like, if Trooper has these certain rules, how does that work with your dog, who probably he has rules, but you're probably a little more lenient with your own pet. I just
Yeah,
sort of wonder how that works.
for sure. So my husband does a lot of the walk-in of both of the dogs, especially in February when it's minus 30. I don't enjoy walking both dogs at the same time. Like I much prefer walking just one of them, and then the other one. But Chewie, who is a delinquent, has picked up on some of Trooper's good habits as well. So it works both ways. So when we're crossing a road, for example, Chewie has way more manners and training now. My husband thinks it's hilarious to give Chewie a chip because he thinks it sounds funny, a dog crunching on a chip. So he has to do that in private so Trooper can't see. Yeah, so we just. I try to be really sensitive. And I know when Cope first approached us, and I said, but we've got Chewy and Chewy's bananas. How's that going to work? And they said, no, lots of people have their own animals at home and you just find workarounds. But I'm always really sensitive to like, well, we can't give Chewy that if Trooper doesn't get it. So apart from the odd chip that he doesn't see, Chewy doesn't really have a lot of, I mean, Chewy can jump up on some things that Trooper's not supposed to. I guess, but that's probably the biggest privilege that Chewie has that Trooper doesn't.
Okay. All right. I was just wondering how that you assimilated the two of them together when you brought them into the house. So.
And then the other thing to think about as well, like, is when you have your own pets in the home, is especially over COVID, everything has to be up to date with all the other animals. Everybody has to have their shots and their flea and tick treatment and things like that. So,
Okay. Thanks.
thanks, Kathy. Well, thank you very much, Louise, for talking about Trooper and his work with Hospice Aurelia. And thank you, Trooper, for joining us, even though nobody got to hear from him directly today. I'm sure he approves of everything Louise has told us about him.
Thank you.
Thank you.